Hey, wake up. New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
What's going on, everyone, and welcome back to the Surprise Jab Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Ruger, surprising you with new topics every single weekend, jabbing you with your daily dose of UFC. And boy, do we have a big event for you guys this weekend. UFC Perth goes down this Saturday, September 27th, live in Western Australia. Or is Perth in Eastern Australia? I don't know. Wherever Perth is, that is where the event is going down in Australia. And we have 14 fights. At one point, there were 16 confirmed, and at one point, Dana White said he was trying to make 17. This is one of the most jam-packed cards we have of the entire year, main evented by Carlos Ullberg and Dominic Reyes. We have a lot of debutants. We have a lot of veterans returning. We have a lot of fun stuff taking place, and we are going to be predicting every matchup that takes place and previewing every single matchup as well. Also, we'll be dropping our NFL Week 4 quick predictions. I've been doing pretty good this season. I really have. What am I on the year? I'm 35-13. Already, that's a 90.4 percentile. The 90 percentile out of the entire world for predictions, and I have won every single week when I'm doing it with my two buddies, Dane and Tyler, who we both had on. Actually, we haven't had Tyler on, but we've had Dane on the podcast before. And also, I watched Dane White's Contender Series, which is how we are going to open this episode, because there have been literally no new UFC fights since we last discussed things. So, without further ado, let's talk about Dana White's Contender Series, because it is these fighters I talk about right now which will be making an impact in the UFC. I was about to say WWE for a second. In the UFC, starting off in 2026. So, without further ado, here's your official recap of Dana White's Contender Series 9.7. And we have another four of the five fights ending in round one. And the one fight that went the distance was a woman's fight, which was an absolute banger. I mean, this was a good card. We kick things off. Rafael Tobias taking on Jair de Oliveira. And let me just say, I predicted this to a T. You know, I thought Rafael Tobias was going to get him out of there. I mean, Jair de Oliveira did not belong in there at all. 29 years old, the height discrepancy, the reach discrepancy, just everything about this screamed Tobias, Rafael Tobias was coming to take over. Landed 13 significant strikes. Everyone that touched him looked dominant. He eventually landed a takedown, was able to take the back, and locked in a rear naked choke hold, and gave Rafael Tobias his 6th straight win and his 6th submission. So 11 of now Rafael Tobias's 14 wins are by finish, and this dude is going to be a problem in the light heavyweight division. We've had some excellent light heavyweight prospects on this season of Dana White's Contender Series, and I can just guarantee you Rafael is going to make a statement. I don't really know who I want to match him up with first, but there's tons of guys that come to mind. You have your Rafael Cerqueras. You have your Billy Elecanas. You have your Ibel Aslan, your Junior Toffas. You have guys where I could just see him coming in, using his grappling, and even the striking. Every time he touched Jair, Jair was reactive and looked like he was going to get stung. And it was beautiful. Great work by Rafael. And yeah, an impressive record of 14-1 coming into the UFC. Jair de Oliveira, 6-1, and yeah, this dude's just not cut out for the UFC. It's just how it works with some of these guys. It's just unfortunate how it works, and you know what? Jair de Oliveira, have fun on the independent scene. Next up, featherweight division, Javier Reyes. Yes, Javier Reyes destroys Justice Torres, and look, I predict it. I can't even pronounce his name. I just watched the fights, by the way. Like, I kid you not, it's 9 o'clock at night. I'm recording this. The fight started at 7, literally just ended at 8:45. So, no real intermission here. I'm still riding on the high of these fights. And Javier Reyes coming into this. I mean, he was 21-5. And out of his 21 wins, 17 finishes. Justice Torres, 12-3. You know, he was the third option of the fighting, you know, to take place here. He was coming in, you know, off of a win. I mean, there wasn't much going for him here. And Javier Reyes just dismantled him. 21 significant strikes to 2. The total strikes was 26-3. Was taken out once, immediately got back up. Just keeps Justice Torres on the run. Eventually hits him with a nasty knee. Down he goes. I mean, it was just eventually too much. He crumbles. Javier Reyes gets his 18th career finish. improves to 22-5 and make that his, if I listed it, his 10th career knockout. I mean, this dude is a savage, and the featherweight division is getting an excellent fighter. Two featherweights on this card, both of them getting round one knockouts. Yeah, I'm excited to see both of them in the UFC. That's for sure. Javier Reyes, good stuff all around. For Justice Torres, I don't know if he has potential. I mean, he's 12-4, not too bad. He trains at a good gym. He's been fighting Fury FC, which is a good, you know, pro organization to be a part of. But I just don't really know if he can hang with, you know, veteran guys. And Javier Reyes, he's 31. He's 31 years old. He had the experience, so he's a 31-year-old rookie coming in. To be fair, Carlos Urberg feels like a rookie, and he's older than Dominic Reyes, which is going to be funny. We'll talk about that later on in the episode. But Javier Reyes gets a contract as well. Domination. Loved to see it. Then we got to the women's flyweight matchup, and I could just tell when this started. I could just tell this was going to be a three-round banger. Just something in my mind was like, we've had two round one finishes. We've been spoiled. We're going the distance, and this was a banger. Jessica Chavez, Sofia Montenegro, the bloodiest fight I've seen on Davis Contreras series ever. Like, I can't remember a more bloodier fight than this. This was an absolute war. Round one, easily my favorite round of the fight. The most back and forth round we had. 50 significant strikes to 30 in favor of Jess La Chavez. And you know what? Sofia was landing hard coming out the bat. She opened her up pretty early on, but then Chavez was just fighting back, firing these beautiful 1-2 straights. I mean, even just the straights in general were landing with efficiency. It was phenomenal. Round two, we go out. Sofia drops her. All right, I thought it was wraps. I thought it was game over. And I don't think Sofia Montenegro has never had to, like, do ground and pound a lot, because she kind of looked confused and, like, didn't know what was she was supposed to do. Eventually, she wound up in top control, stayed there the entire rest of the round. 4 minutes, 21 seconds to control time. Clearly won that round, and mind you, as the round ends, she gets rocked by a straight from Jessica Chavez. It was beautiful. Round three comes around. Urgency from Jessica Chavez, putting the pace on Sofia Montenegro, outstrikes her by double, 29 significant strikes to 14. It was phenomenal to watch. Sofia Montenegro did land a takedown, but Jessica was able to get up and get past him. Funny enough, I didn't know Jessica Chavez used to be a UFC ring girl. UFC ring girl. She has since transitioned to MMA, and she just picked up her 6 wins, 6-0, as she takes home the split decision, beating Sofia Montenegro. But Dana White loved them both, and I'm so happy he did it. You know, both of these women getting a contract. Second women's fight of the season. Second time both of them have gotten a contract. And this is the third time in Dana White's Contender Series history that both a winning fighter and losing fighter have gotten a contract. I mean, it's incredible. History in the making, and it was fantastic to see. It really was fantastic to see. So happy for Jessica Chavez and Sofia Montenegro. There are going to be problems in the women's flyweight division. Let me tell you, these two are durable. They hit hard, and 1-4 on takedown defense. Jessica had some very good takedown defense. I know 4 minutes and 21 seconds round two, but that was from getting rocked. Like, she ate a punch, fell backwards, ate ground and pound. It was good. It was really good, very happy for both of them. And yeah, Sofia Montenegro is coming in with a 6-2 record, but coming in off of a clear fight of the night. Like, this was easily the best fight of the night. Amazing work. So keep your eyes out for Sofia Montenegro and Jessica Chavez in 2026 as they make their UFC debuts. They're going to be exciting fighters to keep an eye on. Then, the second to last matchup of the evening, featherweight division, as Murtaza Magomedov took on Brahman Zurcher. And look, Murtaza Magomedov trains with the Khabib camp. Brahman Zurcher has stepped in to spar with Islam Makhachev ahead of his, actually, he sparred with Islam ahead of his Jay Ray title fight. And unfortunately for Brahman Zurcher, Murtaza Magomedov hits freaking hard. He drops him with a jab. It looked like he stumbled. At first, fight only lasted a minute 37 seconds. He looked like he had, like, slipped or something, but no, he hit him with such a hard jab, stayed on the pace, hit him with a hook, dropped him, landed some excellent ground and pound follow-up, and it was all wraps. Brahman Zurcher lands his first defeat of the season, or of his career, and Murtaza Magomedov improves to 10-0, all 10 of them finishes, 6 in round 1, and gets his 5th career knockout. I mean, just an animal. Just an animal. I mean, Murtaza Magomedov, this dude is a killer, and he's ready to be put in the mix. You know, same with Javier Reyes, another featherweight who won. You're ready to throw him in with the mix. I would love to see Murtaza debut against Pat Sabatini, for goodness sakes. I would love to see him tested in his debut, because the kid's 26 years old. comes from that Kyrgyzstan-Russia region, and he just dismantled the guy in Brahms Archer, who was 9-0 with 7 finishes. So, Murtaza Magomedov, nothing but positive things to say about you, my guy. You are going to be a problem in the UFC. It's going to be exciting to see. As for Brahms Archer, I don't know. I still see potential. But at the same time, if you don't have a chin, if you can't eat hard punches, you won't last in this business. Which brought us to the final matchup of the night. And by the way, everyone I've listed up to this point, if I haven't blatantly said it, they've all gotten contracts. You know, like I said, even the two women, they both got contracts. Nothing different in the main event. The only fight I didn't predict correctly, that was Montes Kondravicius dismantling Dejani Barbier. Now, it's pretty even. And they had some great scrambles right off the back. I mean, this fight only lasted 1:06. And you had this, 27 seconds control time for Barbier, 15 for Montes. It was right for just over 40 seconds of them scrambling with each other on the ground up against the cage. And then Montes just lands this beautiful, kind of like a hook straight, and Dejani goes out, and then kind of, I think, when Dejani fell and he ate the first punch, it woke him back up and he like started to hold on. I do think it might have been a tinge premature, but I'm not acting like he wasn't out. I'm not acting like Montes didn't slump him and it wasn't him falling down and eating a punch that woke him back up. So Dejani Barbier, sorry to see you lose, man. I was hoping to get another banger out of Croatia, but only 8-1. You know, still time to turn your career around, go out, get 8 wins, come back 16-1. You know, it can be done. But Montes Kondravicius, 8-1, picked up a knockout in Cage Warriors in 42 seconds, has now come out and knocked out a guy in 1:06. And yeah, I sense big things ahead in the middleweight division. I mean, this dude's going to be a problem. 6 career knockouts and an absolute animal. And he has 2 subs. This man has a 100% finish rate. Montes, yeah, I'm excited to watch him debut. Against 2? I don't know. Middleweight division's deep. The middleweight division is one of the deepest divisions. How about Torres Finney? Can we make him fight Torres Finney? Can we make that take place? I really hope he has to fight him, for goodness sakes. But yeah, great matchup overall. You know, it was an entertaining 1:06, but Montes destroys him. Wasn't even close. Actually, not what am I saying? It was pretty close. But once he landed a punch, it wasn't close at all. So, 4 round 1 finishes. 3 of them are knockouts. And the one fight that goes the distance is a fight of the night banger between 2 women. Another successful episode. I mean, it's been incredible. This has been the greatest season of Damon's Contender Series, I can happily say. It makes it enjoyable to watch. Like, this is what you tune into and watch and you're excited about. This is what the Ultimate Fighter wishes it was. It's kind of a crazy. I think the Ultimate Fighter has gone away, and now Damon's Contender Series has taken its place as the best place to find not only new contenders, but bring new people to the sport wanting to see excitement. So, Dan West Contender Series, 9.7, gets a 10 out of 10 from Zachary Ruger. And we go 4-1 predictions, which isn't too bad at the end of the day. So, exciting stuff overall. And yeah, tune in every week, guys. I'm telling you, tune in every week. Watch it. Watch episode 8. There's only 3 left of the season. The season is flying by, which also makes me think it's weird that 7 weeks have passed since the first episode, which absolutely sucked. That's when Bozinger Susakarov was on here. I actually remember I saw Superman and Weapons in the same day with 2 of my buddies. Isn't that weird to remember? But Damon's Contender Series 9.7. There's your recap. Go watch the highlights. It is worth a watch. Now, I'll tell you what else is going to be worth a watch. Week 4 of the NFL season. We're back with our quick picks. We got some tougher matchups this week. This is where things start to get tricky. Week 4 is where you see whether teams can grind it out or keep it going. So we're going to go through every matchup. We got some on Thursday, got some on Sunday, got some on Monday, and I'm going to lock in my predictions. Let's freaking do it. Kicking off week number 4, Thursday night showdown in the NFC West as the Seahawks visit the Cardinals. And I don't know, these games in the NFC West are always so unpredictable. You never know what team is going to show up. I mean, the Seahawks team, which I saw this past week, they looked good. They looked dominant. They looked like a team that can get it done and can be world beaters. And as for the Cardinals, they choked against the 49ers. They had the game, and they choked it. So it's really tough to know what you're going to get with both of these teams, which always makes it tough to predict their matchups. Cardinals are coming off of a loss. Seahawks are on a 2-game winning streak. And this one is in, you know, Arizona, which they've gone 1-0 at home. Seahawks are 1-0 on the road. So there's literally not much to analyze here. There really isn't. But when I look at the offenses, I look at the fact James Conner is injured. Marvin Harrison Jr. has been struggling against good wideouts, has been struggling against good cornerbacks, and Kyler Murray has been average at best. And the Seahawks defense is currently either, I think, 1, 2, or 3 the best defenses in fantasy football for the league. I mean, they are having an excellent start to the season. Their defense has been on fire. Just got 17 fantasy points last weekend in their victory. So I'm going to go with the Seahawks to defeat the Cardinals. It is Thursday Night Football. Anything can happen, but as I've seen a bit of a trend through the first 3 weeks, is that the team that's predicted to win on Thursday Night Football has won. So I'm going to go with the Seahawks to win. I am a Jaxon Smith-Njigba fan, and I really have never picked a Cardinals player. I've never had Kyler Murray, never had Marvin Harrison Jr., I've never had James Carr. The last Cardinals player I had in fantasy football, I kid you not, was my rookie year when I had, Larry Fitzgerald, who was my, he actually won me my first ever championship the first year I played in fantasy football. So Seahawks over the Cardinals should be close, but I think Sam Darnold can handle business. Then we head over to the great state of London, the great state, as I say, I realize it's a country, and I'm telling you guys I'm smart. I promise you I'm smart. I'm not that dumb. As I'm clicking on it, there's ads. They now have ads on ESPN. So when you go to click on the matchup to predict it, it takes you to some Google, who knows, Bang Bros type of thing. But it's Vikings and Steelers going down 8:30 a.m. Yikes. Yikes is all I'm going to say. I mean, I'm obviously picking the Vikings here, and I think the Vikings historically win when they are playing in London, but I will say it is against a Steelers team, which also traditionally wins. So, I mean, this I pick the Vikings every week. Actually, last week I picked the Bengals, and it kind of worked, so maybe I should pick the Steelers, but I generally don't think the Steelers are going to win. We're going to own Aaron Rodgers again. Who do they have? Who they have? They got DK Metcalf. Yeah, their defense is good. And who they have? Jaylen Warren? Absolutely not. You know, we get Jordan Addison back, who I might put in my league. I don't know. Should I bench DJ Moore and put in Jordan Addison? I don't know. But yeah, Vikings easy pick. Don't need to say much on that. I just love that it's the Steelers and the Vikings in London. Two teams which just signify London to me. And the last time they played in London, the Vikings won. So unless this game's in Dublin. I know they have a game in Dublin and a game in London. So I think this is a London one. But if I'm wrong, then you can flame me down below or something, or wherever you're listening to this. Go into the comments, go text me on Instagram or Twitter and be like, hey, you idiot, it's in Dublin. Oh, well, I'm riding with the Vikings wherever it's at. Then we get into our noon slate on Sunday. Commanders take it on the Falcons, and I thought the Falcons were going to be a great team this year. Turns out they suck. Turns out Kirk Cousins might actually start over Michael Penix Jr. I mean, what was that, Falcons? Beating the Vikings, not even giving up a touchdown, and then you go and don't even score against the Panthers. The Panthers suck. Oh my goodness. Now, the Commanders didn't do good either. They're 2-1. Now, let's not act like the Commanders had themselves a good week. They did not have themselves a good week. They went out and beat the Raiders. Oh, they did beat the Raiders. Huh, they did beat the Raiders. Who was I thinking of that they lost to? I don't even freaking know. Clearly, I don't know ball. But yeah, I'm picking the Commanders this season. I think I have Scary Terry and Deebo Samuel in some leagues. I hope Jaden Daniels comes back because in one league I have him. And with him being out, it really hurts me. So I will be rooting for Jaden Daniels to return, but it's 90% to 10% picking the Commanders. But oddly enough, the Falcons are only plus 180, so tread cautiously with this matchup. But I'm easily going to ride with the Commanders, as the Falcons, I generally don't know what they're doing. Another noon game, and this has to be everyone's lock of the week, as the minus 1,800 Bills take on the plus 900 Saints. 99% of ESPN has picked the Bills. Only 1% have picked the Saints. Saints are 0-3. Bills are 3-0. I don't really know what much more that I need to say, to be honest. Like generally, I have no idea. No more I need to say. I'm going with the Bills. I have Josh Allen in some leagues. I have James Cook in a league. I have Chris Olave, Alvin Kamara. I don't really care about. Look, the Bills are a powerhouse. The Saints are the worst team in the NFL currently. This should be a Bills obliteration. Yet again, it is the NFL. Anything can happen. But I am going to go with Buffalo. They're also at home, which benefits them. Should be a dominant win for them. Next up, we got the noon game. Browns visiting the Lions. And hey, I thought the Browns were a lock to lose the Packers. Clearly, I'm mistaken. That game's actually being investigated, I heard, for like for sports betting, like for the Packers tanking because of how much money was on the Packers. $1.2 billion in betting was on the Packers when they choked that game. But, you know, we don't rely on superstition. We don't rely on, you know, weird betting. We rely on just sheer looking at the fact the Lions beat the Ravens by 2 scores, and the Browns beat the Packers. And look, the Lions are still a dominant team. They have no faults, and we just witnessed the shifting dynamic where some weeks Jahmyr Gibbs and David Montgomery lead the backfield. Other days, it's Jameson Williams, Amon-Ra, Jared Goff, Aaron out. It's Lions over the Browns, but if the Browns beat the Lions again, I think the Browns may own the NFC North. I think if the Browns beat the Lions, there's something shifty going on there. But I don't even know how the Browns won that game, because overall, the entire Browns offense was awful. So, going to go with the Lions in this one. It's the easy pick, and they're also minus 550 favorites. So, good overall over there. Next up, we got another noon game, Panthers and Patriots. Tricky here. Both teams are 1-2. Patriots are the favorites, but the Patriots just don't strike me as a good team. I know they're supposed to be good, but they picked up a loss last weekend, and I mean, they played the Steelers close, but at the same time, they were never really that close. At the end of the day, I never really saw them putting it together. The Panthers are carrying some serious momentum. I do want to point some out, is that the Panthers are going to be at on away. The Panthers are on the road, and I think the Panthers historically win more when they're at home, but they are a good underdog prediction. I'm torn here. I'm really torn here. These two teams are very similar, young quarterbacks. Chuba Hubbard does have the edge over Trayvon Henderson, but if you want to bring in, who always takes over? Ramondre Stevenson. Ramondre Stevenson always will just come in and steal carries from Trayvon Henderson. Diggs hasn't been connecting with May. Look, I think it's better often than not to pick the Patriots over the Panthers, but if the Panthers win this week, I'll consider picking them more. But I am going to go with the Patriots, being that they're at home, being that the Panthers beat the Falcons. And historically, when we look at the Panthers and Falcons, their games are always flip-flop. So I'm going to go with the Patriots to beat the Panthers. It's crazy to think back in 2015, this would have been Tom Brady versus Cam Newton, and now it's Bryce Young versus Drake May. Huh, how the times change. Another noon game, Chargers and Giants, 3-0, 0-3. I really like the Giants here. I really like the Giants, and I don't know why. I genuinely don't know why, but I can't pick the Giants because their QB locker room is not it. They were exposed by the Chiefs, and Cam Scadabaugh had a breakout game, but that was it. Cam Scadabaugh was a one-man crew out there. He was the star of Sunday Night Football, even over all the Chiefs players, and yet his team overall absolutely sucked. Meanwhile, the Chargers are looking like a dominant unit. They are currently, in my opinion, the second best team in the league. I have them. I have them behind the Bills. I actually have the Chargers ahead of the Colts, ahead of the 49ers, ahead of the Eagles, and ahead of the Buccaneers for being best teams in the league. They're all 3-0, by the way. So I'm going to go with the Chargers over the Giants, but monitor this, as something in me says the Giants may just pull out a little bit of trickery here, as this is in New York and it's across the country for the Chargers. Next up, another noon game, Eagles and Buccaneers. And the only reason I'm picking the Eagles here, is because the Buccaneers have been playing in a lot of close games. Mind you, they're 3-0, but I just think when it comes down to these close games, the Eagles are more experienced, more cohesive, and we witnessed the Rams comeback, and we witnessed the goal line stand where they block the kick, return it to end the game. Yeah, and by the way, I also have Devontae Smith, so I'm going to be rooting for him a lot. I also got Jalen Hurts, Saquon Barkley, but I also have Amika Buka and Bucky Irving. I mean, I've been in way too many leagues. That's all I'm going to say. I'm in way too many fantasy leagues, so Eagles over the Bucs, but hey, you know what? Buccaneers can always pull off the upset. The more I look, I'm actually playing this way more conservative than picking upsets, but a part of me knows that that's the right course of action to take. Give me the Eagles over the Bucs. Next up, for the noon slate, and it'll round out our noon slate, Titans and Texans. They're both 0-3. Titans are plus 300. Texans are minus 400. This really makes me want to pick the Texans. I mean, pick the Titans, I should say, because the Texans are just such an obvious pick. They're just, I mean, the Texans shouldn't even be 0-3. It doesn't make any sense. They only have a minus 13 point differential, which isn't that bad at all. But the Titans, minus 43 point differential. I mean, they have looked abysmal. Lose by 3 touchdowns to the Colts. Lose by 3 touchdowns to the Rams. And then they did play the Broncos close, but that was the season opener. And season openers are never the same. I remember Gardner Minshew was quarterback for the Jags, and he said, this is our year if they won week one. And they proceeded to not win a single game the rest of the season. So I am going to pick the Texans here, but if the Titans win, it is going to be hilarious. I actually have a really hard time seeing the Titans win a game this year, So if they are going to win one, I think this would be a perfect one to choose. But yes, I am going to go with the Texans to get this done. Should be close and competitive. Next up, Colts taking on the Rams to kick off our 3 o'clock slate. And yeah, this one should go to the Rams. This Colts team has been on a roll. But when I look at this Colts schedule, I think that's important to look at. The Colts are 3-0. They technically have the best point differential in the entire league. They've beaten the Titans. They've beaten the Broncos by one. And they blew out the Dolphins. And we've just learned that the Dolphins absolutely suck. Meanwhile, the Rams are out here just an offensive explosion. And by the way, my buddy Garrett, we've had him on the pod before on a big episode of All the Boys. He traded me a second round pick in our Dynasty Sleeper League for Davante Adams. Yeah, thank you for Davante Adams. By the way, I'm 3-0 and the best team in the league. I will most definitely be picking the Rams now, as I am now a Davante Adams fan. Don't know how that occurred, but thank you, Garrett. I truly, truly appreciate it. Next game at 3 o'clock, Jaguars and the 49ers. And after watching the 49ers come back against the Cardinals, I think anything is possible for this team. I really hope Brock Purdy gets back soon, but the fact this team is doing so good, missing George Kittle, missing Brandon Ayuk, no longer having Deebo Samuel, really shows me how good they are. And the Jacksonville Jaguars seem to have lost all chemistry they have. I almost wonder if Travis Hunter coming on has thrown off everything they've had. They also got rid of Tank Bigsby. They got rid of Tank Bigsby, who I absolutely love. So I don't really know what more to say here. Going with the 49ers, they're 3-0. And as for the 2-1 Jags, I think they're frauds. I think this is going to be an 8-9 team this year, and they haven't been passing to Brian Thomas Jr. And whether I have Brian Thomas Jr. or don't, I'm a Brian Thomas Jr. fan, so that makes me sad. So I'm going to go with the 49ers in this one. I hate to be going with all the favorites, but in reality, like generally, I can see upsets in all these games. But also when I think about it, if these teams play correctly, like a team like the 49ers should beat a team like the Jacksonville Jaguars. Next up at 3:30, can't believe it's not Monday Night Football or Sunday Night Football. It's Ravens and Chiefs. Holy cow. And the Ravens, -150 are 1-2. The Chiefs, +130 are 1-2. And now everyone's picking the Ravens. And I do have Lamar Jackson, which makes me also want to pick the Ravens. But there's something about this Chiefs team where they finally got a win over the Giants, where I can just see them carrying some momentum in. And I also think that this Chiefs team is going to beat good teams. I really do. I think they're going to beat good teams this year. And I also think that, you know, they played the Chargers in a super close game to open the season. They then, and by the way, that was in Brazil. I do want to add that was in Brazil. They then go on the road to play the Eagles. They then lose that matchup. So now the Chiefs are back at home. The Chiefs are ready to throw down. The Chiefs are ready to get back into the winning column. And I think that's exactly what they're going to do. So actually, the Eagles, I stand corrected, gang, the Eagles were on the road. So the Chiefs lost to the Eagles, but again, the Eagles do kind of own the Chiefs now. So I'm going to go with the Chiefs, actually, but I am going to be aggressively, aggressively rooting for Lamar Jackson. This is kind of a nightmare matchup for him. This Chiefs defense is good. Don't let anyone fool you. This Chiefs defense is very stout, very stellar. But yeah, we're going to go with the Baltimore Ravens in this matchup. Then rounding out our 3:30 games, Bears and Raiders. I actually have a lot of my family. You know, my grandpa, my uncle, my grandpa's friend, who freaking is the manager of a yacht club, guy's a beauty, and I believe my cousin Parker, all going to Las Vegas. Oh, and my other uncle, Uncle Dan, they're all going to Las Vegas to watch this game at Allegiant Stadium. First time that any of them have been there. The Bears will be going there. They're all Bears fans, and they're taking on the Raiders, and I'm torn here. I'm torn here because I have Ashton Jeanty and I have DJ Moore, and I'm probably going to bench DJ Moore for Jordan Addison just because I just don't know if they're going to pass to DJ Moore. I also don't know if they're going to pass to Jordan Addison, but I also don't know if Ashton Jeanty's going to be any good. And I hope Ashton Jeanty's going to be freaking good, but I just don't really know. I know that this Raiders defense is pretty awful, but their offense has potential. Their offense does have potential. And as for the Bears, yeah, they picked up a dominant win over the Cowboys, but can they continue that as they go on the road to Las Vegas? And truth be told, I don't really know. I actually am leaning towards the Raiders here. Raiders are coming in as the favorites at -110, but I have a feeling they may shift to an underdog. I'm going to go with the Raiders in this one. I'm going to predict a breakout game for Ashton Jeanty. And if not, I should probably sell him. I should really probably get rid of Ashton Jeanty, but I keep holding on that he's going to have a breakout game. Maybe it'll be this week. And also, if he has a breakout game, should I just sell him? After, I think that's what I'm waiting for. That's at the end of the day what I'm actually waiting for. Going with the Raiders over the Bears, anything can happen. It's a toss-up. It's a coin toss, and we're going to go with the Raiders. Then Sunday Night Football is where we're at. Then we have a doubleheader. on Monday. They just love them Monday night doubleheaders. We got Packers and Cowboys. Packers 91% minus 400 favorites taking on the plus two. Actually, what are they? Plus 280 underdogs. The Cowboys, only 9% of ESPN users have picked them, and I don't blame them. I really don't blame them, but I don't know. Something's telling me the Cowboys going to get their lick back. Something's telling me the Cowboys are going to bounce back. Now, CeeDee Lamb may be out, but I don't know. There's just something about that Packers team losing so bad to the Browns, which is just really, something's weird about that. I think the Packers might be frauds. The Packers might be frauds when I look at it. Now, I know simple NFL math would say Packers beat the Bears beat the Cowboys, therefore Packers beat Cowboys, but I don't see that being the case. I see the Packers losing. I see the Packers shockingly being 2-2 and people questioning how they've lost close games to the Browns and the Cowboys. I don't really have anyone in these matchups. I do have Dak Prescott, and of course I have Brandon Aubrey. So for that reason, with Brandon Aubrey, with Dak Prescott in the league, and by the way, I have Brandon Aubrey in 5 of my 6 leagues. I clearly love me. So Brandon Aubrey, I'm going to go with the Cowboys to win. And you know what? It's an underdog prediction, and I like it. Now, moving on to Monday, wrapping up the week. First game going down at 6:15 Central Time. Jets visiting the Dolphins. And for some reason, everyone's picking the Dolphins. I don't know why. I kind of do know why. Look, the Dolphins, they should be good. They got A-Chain. They got Tua. They got Tyreek. They got Jalen Waddle. And as for the Jets, they don't really have anyone. And then today, they got Tyrod Taylor, Garrett Wilson. You know, not much at the end of the day. And somehow the Jets are 0-3 as well, which I thought they were 1-2. So Dolphins are 0-3. Jets are 0-3. I guess, in reality, I should pick the Dolphins. I mean, when I look at teams that are probably going to start 0-4, I didn't think either of these teams was going to start out 0-4. So maybe a tie? Can I predict a tie in this game? No, I can't. Alrighty. Well, we're going to go with the Dolphins then, because that's what everyone else is going with. And I guess I have A-Chain. And for the Jets, I do have Garrett Wilson. And if Justin Fields play, I would love to pick Justin Fields. But yeah, it makes sense to have the Miami Dolphins. So we will go with the Dolphins as our prediction. Plus, Zeke, we've had on as a guest before. He helped preview UFC 306 with us. He is a diehard Miami Dolphins fan. So for him, I will pick the Dolphins. Then we'll end the week in Denver. Denver as the Broncos host the Bengals. And I know it's going to be tough to pick the Bengals the rest of the year, you know, with Joe Burrow being out, and especially with the blowout that took place against the Vikings. But the Broncos aren't that much better of a team. You know, Broncos are 1-2. We don't need to act like the Broncos are this amazing team. But yeah, Bengals, they have zero momentum going for them. They're going to need to work some of that momentum back, which is why I will ride with the Broncos. So with that, we do have a lot of home teams picked. As I've looked at it, I have, out of all the matchups, guys, out of all the matchups, I only have, holy cow, I don't even know how I did this, five of the 16 games, I have away teams winning. So that's not really odds in my favor. But you know what? I'm just going to ride with my picks. I don't really mind. This weekend, I'm going to be super busy. I'm going to be on the go a lot, and I just don't really have the time to make all these predictions. So we'll say it's 30-28. Broncos beat Bengals on a game-winning kick. How about that? Game-winning field goal kick, Broncos over Bengals. But those are your NFL Week 4 quick picks. You know I'm crafty with it. You know I'm crafty with my NFL quick picks. They aren't that quick. It took 20 minutes to make picks. But hey, if we think about that, it's just over like a minute and 10 seconds per pick. So good stuff overall. Very happy with that. And I also tell you what I'm going to be happy with. And that's going to be our UFC Perth predictions. Oh my goodness. I am as peachy as a pie to make these. We have a lot. We have a lot, guys. And it's coming to a point where it's 9:30 at night and I have to make all these picks. So we're going to get through this. We're going to drop some banger predictions and I'm going to get you all hyped up for UFC Perth, which I think starts middle of the day since it's in Australia. I don't really know. Let's take a look at this card. Kicking off this card, we head to the women's strawweight division as we have Loma Luke Boonmi, who I believe is actually ranked in the women's strawweight division, number 14. Yes, she is, as she takes on the unranked Alexia Thanera Burgushina. It's her nickname. I have no idea what that means, but cool nickname, I guess, Alexia. 10-3 for Loma, 12-1 for Alexia, 5'4" to 5'1". Some height for Alexia and some reach as well, 67 inches. Whoa. To 61 in favor of Alexia, and they both fight in the orthodox fighting position. Luyana, actually, this fight was moved up. This was not even on my radar. This one was supposed to take place mid prelims, but they've been shuffling around this bout order. So let me find this on my notes. +190 for Loma Luke Boonmi, -250 for Alexia Thanera. We'll start with Loma Luke Boonmi here. You know, always at a size disadvantage she is, but 10-3 professionally, and she's been all right in the UFC. 29 years old from Thailand, one of, if not the only, fighters fighting out of Thailand. I know that for a fact. She trains at her own Muay Thai gym, the Luke Boonmi Muay Thai gym in Thailand. And of her 10 wins, she only has 2 finishes, 1 KO and 1 sub. And of her 3 defeats, she's only ever been submitted once, and that was pre-UFC. She's gone 7-2 in the UFC, which is pretty stellar, and currently rides a 4-fight winning streak. Last win was in April when she grappled Estela Nunes to a decision victory. It was pretty even overall, but got it done. Her biggest career win has probably been over Elise Reed, who she submitted, but she also holds a win over Denise Gomez, which is pretty good. Her only losses are to Lupi Godinez and Angela Hill, who are currently ranked number 6 and number 12 in the division. So Loma Luke Boonmi is experienced. She is coming in, you know, this always at a size disadvantage. She is smaller, but she uses her grappling to always prove significant for her in getting it done. She takes on a formidable threat in Alexia Thanera. The 27-year-old is from Brazil and is on a 10-fight winning streak. She fights at Hebus Family in Brazil, which is the same gym as Amanda Hebus, who is still ranked. I wonder, Amanda Hebus is no longer ranked. Is she kick? Oh, she's ranked number 11 in the division. I was wondering if they had fired her, but I think it was, or not fired, but released. I think it was the other one. Vivian Arujo is who they let go, but no. Hebus is still in there, and she trains with Alexia Thanera. Of her 12 victories, she has 8 subs, and of her 1 defeat, it was by submission. She has, what I have here? She has a 2, oh, actually, here's a fun fact about Alexia Thanera. She's a submission girl, so she has 8 subs, actually, I meant to say, of her 12 victories. And out of those 8, she's had 2 arm bars both get done in 8 seconds. I have no idea how that stat's even possible, but it is. Fought on Dewey's Contreras series last season, got a dominant victory, and then debuted in March this year and dismantled Molly McCann, submitted her in round number 1 with a rear naked choke. It wasn't even close, and after watching that, I can best say that I'm riding with Alexia Thanera here. Unless you see Loma Luke Boonmi get the jump on her, I got the -250 favorite Alexia Thanera getting herself another round 1 submission. Moving up, we have 2 brand new heavyweights debuting in the UFC, and thankfully they haven't even updated the stats, so we have no idea how big these boys are, which is just wonderful to see. We have Brando the Balkan Bear Parrish, who is 4-1. He's the -185 favorite, taking on the Snack Panther Alicia Ellison, who is 5-1. He is the +150 underdog. And yeah, both men stand in the orthodox fighting position. I don't know a lickety split about height or reach on either of these guys. Thank you, UFC stats, as this fight takes place in 5 days, and I don't know. Actually, it takes place in 4 days. This fight takes place in 4 days. By the time you listen to this, it'll be 3 days, and they don't have the stats updated. Thank you. Thank you so much, UFC. Brando Parrish, though, is 31 years old, and he is the hometown boy from Southern Australia. He currently rides a 2-fight winning streak and trains at City Kickboxing. Of course, the credited gym to Dan Hooker, Israel Asanya, Kai Kerfran. A lot of guys fight there, and we're going to talk about some more fighters who fight there on this card. He was actually supposed to fight on Dan Wiskinara's series week number 4 and taking on Alicia Ellison. So this matchup was supposed to happen on week 4 of Dan Wiskinara's series. Instead, it's taking place on this card. Of his 4 wins, he has 3 KOs and 1 sub, all taking place in round number 1. So he's a big prospect. He's coming in. Excited to see him as he takes on the 28-year-old Alicia Ellison. He is 28 years old from Washington and rides a 3-fight winning streak. He trains at Combat Sport and Fitness, the same gym as Chase Hooper. Of his 5 wins, 5 finishes, 4 KOs, and 1 sub, all of them coming in round number 1. His last win came in January, so I'm excited to see this matchup take place. All these guys have never left round 1. It's been pretty exciting overall, or at least for their finishes. They've never left round 1, so I expect some fireworks here, and hopefully we can get a new heavyweight prospect in the UFC. I am going to ride with Brando Parrish here. He's a hometown guy. His finishes have looked more impressive to me, and just from their tapeology pictures, I thought he looked more dominant. So Brando Parrish over Alicia Ellison. I also like his nickname more, the Balkan Bear over the Snack Panther. The Snack Panther sounds so goofy. I just hope that one of these guys is actually talented and can break into the UFC, because you never know. You never know with some of these guys. The heavyweight division is so hard to break into, so fingers crossed. That's all I'll say. Then moving along, we have, we'll see what the next bout order they got going here. Perfect. It's looking to stay continuous. Women's bantamweight division, which is a division where we desperately need women. You got Michelle Montague, the wild one, making her UFC debut against Luiana Dread Carolina. Southpaw stance for the 6-0. Michelle Montague, orthodox for Luiana Carolina. They don't have any stats on Michelle Montague. Thank you, UFC. Thank you so much. Michelle is the minus 220 favorite, though. Plus 175 is the UFC veteran, Luiana Carolina. And we'll start with Luiana Carolina because we can pick more of her, you know, fighting career apart as opposed to Michelle Montague. Luiana from Brazil, of her victories, 3 KOs and 1 sub. You know, she's been all right. She's been all right. Of her 4 defeats, she's been finished twice. She's gone 6-3 in the UFC. She was originally supposed to fight Montana De La Rosa back in March. That fight never took place. So her last fight was in July of 2024. She does ride a 3-fight winning streak into this contest. So it's carrying in some momentum. Her last loss was in March of 2023, a split decision to Joanne Wood. She holds wins over Priscilla Cachoeira and Lupi Godinez, both very good wins. Her last win was over Lucy Pudilova. Not the most notable, but yeah. Luiana Carolina, always interesting to see. I've seen her get knockouts, seen her be knocked out, seen her get submission. I've also seen her get submitted. So I've seen about everything with Luiana Carolina. I just think the one thing I haven't seen is impressive performances overall. And that's where Michelle Montague comes in, as Michelle is 31 years old from New Zealand. Actually trains at American Top Team, I think, over in the United States. So that's pretty interesting. Of her 6 wins, 6 subs. Like, her entire game plan is to take you down and submit her. She's gone 4-0 in the PFL and 1-0 in Bellator. Her last win, August of 2024. So neither of these women fought in 2025, but this is a submission expert in Michelle Montague. And this is one of those cards similar to the Paris card. I am hoping that new fighters can break through on this event. Gonna go with Michelle Montague. Give me the round one submission. I'm predicting we start out this card with a lot of finishes. This could be the best prelims we have the entire year. Keep us moving, gang. We're now into the men's bantamweight division. And another bout shuffling here. All right, this wasn't supposed to be the fourth prelim in, but now it is. Colby Slickness Thickknees takes on the KO wizard, Josias Muasasa. Colby, plus 140 is the underdog. Josias, minus 170 is the favorite. Colby Thickknees, 7-1. Josias, 8-1. 5'8 to 5'7 inch in height for Muasasa, and a notable 5 inches in reach for Josias. Southpaw with the left hand for Muasasa, orthodox with the right for Colby Slickness Thickknees. That's a little tongue twister there. Colby Slickness Thickknees. That's really helping me grind my S's there. Let's start with Colby here, okay? He's the underdog, but he's also the hometown boy. 26 years old from South Wales, Australia. Of his 7 wins, 2 KOs, and 2 subs. And the last fight he had where he won the Hex Championship. I don't know what that is, but I believe it is a big Australian fighting promotion. Fought against Alexander Topuria back in February, last time we were in Australia, and he lost. Okay, got 30-27 across the board, but he survived. Okay, and at the end of the day, not everyone can say they survived against Alexander Topuria, because he's tough competition. He really is. El Conquistador is as tough as it gets. And you know what? Colby Thickknees refused to be put away, and I do think that has to hold some validity to his career. Now, as for his opponent, Josias Muasasa, this dude, I think, is on fraud watch. I really do. He's the favorite coming in, minus 170, but Josias, 26 years old as well, from the Dominican Republic, Congo, 7 of his 8 wins are by KO, 6 in round 1. But he won a split decision on Dana White's Contender Series last season to get a contract. And when he debuted earlier this year in March, he was submitted in 3 minutes by Carlos Vera. I want you all to know Carlos Vera is not UFC quality. He is nowhere near UFC quality at all. And he managed to drop Josias and submit him. So I'm going to go with Colby Thickknees here. I do think this is a good bounce back fight for Josias, especially if he is really a KO artist. But I really think this is a good underdog prediction. I love picking the Australians in Australia. And seeing how durable Colby was against Topuria and how he refused to go away, I think that has to hold some validity here. So we're going to go with the hometown boy, Colby Thickknees, to get a win before the year's end. I really hope he does, because he's got a fun name. Next up, lightweight division. Jamie Mullarkey, Rolando the Machine Bedoya, going at it. No idea how Rolando is still in the UFC. He must have gotten a fantastic contract from his agent, because he has not really done much in the company. 17-8 for Jamie, 14-4 for Rolando. 6'5'11", decently close. Both men have a 74-inch reach. Both men fight in the orthodox stance. 3 years separate them. This is about as even as you can get. Minus 105 for Jamie, minus 115 for Orlando. The odds makers can't even choose. We'll start with Jamie, 31 years old, from none other than Australia. 13 of his 17 wins are by finish, 10 KOs and 3 subs. Of his 8 defeats, he's been knocked out 6 times. He has gone very bad in the UFC, 5-6. You know, it's been a rough going, but he hasn't fought since May 2024. And you want to know the last two guys to beat him? Mauricio Ruffy, Nasrat Haqparast. Okay, he's on a 2-fight losing streak, knocked out round 1, but he lost to Mauricio Ruffy, and he made it longer than Bobby Green, to give him some credit. He is 1-3 in his last 4, so this is make or break for sure for Jamie Mullarkey, but this man holds wins over Michael Johnson, Francisco Prado. I mean, he's not that bad. Last win was September of 2023 in Australia. So maybe now that he's back in Australia. By the way, actually, his last two wins have came in Australia. That's actually hilarious. I didn't even realize that. Debuted in 2019, and two of his wins of his 5 of the UFC have came in Australia. I think there's a connection there. I think we can find a connection. And even his debut, he lost a fight of the night to Brad Riddell in Australia. So I am definitely liking Jamie Mullarkey in this one. Don't want to hold a Mauricio Ruffy knockout loss against him. And he has had almost a year and a half to prepare for this contest as he takes on Rolando Bedoya. And Rolando is 28 years old from Peru. 7 of his wins are by finish, 4 KOs and 3 subs. Only a 50% finishing rate. All 4 of his defeats are by decision. Dude's not even entertaining, all right? Lost his debut to Cass Williams in May of 2023. Lost to Song Keenong in August of 2023. Last fight, August of 2024, was made to look silly against Jai Herbert. I am confidently picking Jamie Mullarkey here, and I really hope Jamie Mullarkey closes as an underdog. He would be such a fun underdog predictions. He's Australian. He has had much more success in the UFC than Rolando Bedoya, and I think he is potentially getting knocked out here. I really think he does. Orlando has been dropped in his last two matchups. His chin isn't all there, and I think not fighting for a while. It may hurt both of them, but I do think for someone with us, you know, actually, either way could go out here. I can't even lie. Either way could go out here, but I'm going to ride with the Australian here in Jamie Mullarkey. Come on, Jamie, one more win to go out on. It would suck if he ends his career on a 3-fight KO losing streak, but we'll see what happens here. This fight will go down on the prelims. From lightweight to welterweight, we welcome back the captain, Jonathan McLeff, as he takes on a man who has had an up-and-down year in Oban, the Welsh gangster Elliot. Jonathan, 8-1, is coming in as the plus 105 underdog. The 12-3 Oban is the minus 135 favorite. Both men are 6'5" in reach for Jonathan. 77-72 is the one advantage I see. And a southpaw stance for Jonathan and an orthodox stance for Oban shows another discrepancy. But other than that, these two size-wise are very similar. Let's start with Jonathan here. Coming in as the underdog, he is a native of Australia. 26 years old, he rides a 3-fight winning streak. Of his 8 wins, 5 finishes, 2 KOs, and 3 subs. Of his 1 defeat, his lone defeat, it was a round 4 KO loss. So this dude has gone into deep waters outside the UFC. Got a 3-minute triangle choke on the final episode of Dana White's Contender Series last year. He would debut in February of this year, knocking off Kevin Jussette in a, you know, somewhat, I'd say, impressive performance. Now, when it comes to Kevin Jussette sucked. I mean, Brian Battle put him away, which is good to see, but the fact Jonathan couldn't might be a bit, you know, cautious. You know, I do want to say that. However, he did put on a rather good performance in this contest. Jonathan, fighting off Australia, he's young, he's hungry. He's taking on the toughest opponent of his career in none other than Oban, the Welsh gangster Elliot, who might have one of my favorite nicknames in the UFC. This man has had a wild run as of late. 27 years old from Wales, you know, over in Wales, not South Wales, Australia. This is Wales. We're talking the UK. He trains at Shore MMA, the gym that Jack Shore owns. 3 KOs and 3 subs give him a 50% finishing rate, and of his 3 defeats, he's been KO'd twice. Came into the UFC on a great run. 8-fight winning streak, wins on Damage Contender Series, beats Val Woodburn, beats Preston Parsons, and then knocks out Pabasel Hafez at UFC 309. He's looking all good. Then in June, goes to UFC Qatar and gets grappled to death by Sung Hook Ko. Just grappled to death. At the end of the day, he was just, I mean, to 6 of 9 takedowns, 10 minutes, 15 seconds control time, it wasn't pretty at all. But it just showed an area he needs to improve. And we've looked at, you know, pieces of Oban Elliott's game where he needs to improve. It's certainly in the grappling. I just don't know. I really don't know with this one. You know, Oban Elliott has a lot of potential here, but I'm wondering if this is a sign of a decline.
I really do. And Jonathan Mikuláev is coming in on a little win streak of his own. He's been looking impressive, but I've seen Oban fight. And if he fights like the Basil Hafez fight, he'll get it done. But if he fights like the last time against Sung Hyo Koh, he will get grappled to death. We've been riding with just about every single Australian here. I know I can't pick every Australian. I know that. But, do we really think Oban's going to win? I don't know. These guys are really similar, like even in their fight style. I'm going to be honest. They fight pretty similarly. You know what? I'm torn here, guys. I really am. I make my predictions live on air. And you know what? I'm going to go with Oban here. Something's telling me Oban Elliott's going to get this done. We can't have every Australian winning unless that's a thing. Unless every Australian actually wins. And that would have been the easiest card to predict ever. But I am going to go with Oban Elliott to get this done. Maybe even a knockout, perhaps. I don't know. I just don't think his limit is Sung Hyo Koh. I would really, really hate to see him lose to Jonathan Mikuláev and that be Oban Elliott's career. But we'll see what happens. We're going to go with Jonathan Mikuláev to lose to Oban Elliott as the favorite here. Next up, middleweight division, and we have another fighter from Dana White's Contender Series Season 9 getting a opportunity. The Battle Giraffe, Cameron Ralston, is taking on Andre Petrovsky. And Cameron Ralston coming in 12-3. Andre is 13-4. 6'3" to 6'4" height for Cameron Ralston and reach 78-73. Orthodox for Cam, switch stance for Andre Petrovsky. Andre is the favorite. Cam is the underdog, minus 145 to plus 120. The odds do have this pretty close. Looking at Andre Petrovsky, we know this guy. We know Andre. 34 years old from Pennsylvania. Trains at Henzo Grassi in Philly with Sean Brady, who is his training partner out there. Of his 13 wins, 8 to bar by a finish, 4 KOs and 4 subs. Of his 4 defeats, he's been knocked out 3 times. He's gone 8-3 in the UFC and recently had his 3-fight win streak snapped in Atlanta by Edmund Shahbazyan. And that fight really exposed Andre's poor striking. It really is. And he came out, you know, at a close round one. Round two was even closer, but then round three was just made to look silly. Andre started off good in the UFC. And, you know, it's easy to submit guys that you are more talented than and finish them. But then he started running into Wellington Turman. Couldn't put him away. Gerald Meerschaert, split decision, knocked out by Michelle Barra, knocked out by Jacob Malkoon. Then goes on a 3-fight winning streak. All of them kind of boring grappling decisions. And then, of course, the loss to Edmund Shahbazyan. But I know he's good. I know Andre's good. He's a really tough opponent to draw right off the bat. So I think it's going to come down to if Cam can catch him and if Andre can learn from his losses. Look at the Edmund Shahbazyan loss. You just got to take him down. You just got to submit him. He has not been hunting for finishes. He hasn't attempted a submission since July of 2024. He hasn't even attempted ground and pound since then. So Andre Petrovsky will have his hands full as he takes on the debuting Cameron Ralston. The Battle Giraffe is 30 years old, and he is from New South Wales, Australia. Trains at City Kickboxing. Currently riding a 4-fight winning streak. 11 of his 12 wins are by finish, 4 KOs and 7 subs. Of his 3 defeats, he's been finished only once in his career by knockout. And of his 12 wins, 6 of them have came in round 1 with a finish. He fought Torres Finney on Season 8, Episode 2. He lost that fight by getting grappled to utter death. Went out, got some wins, came back on this season, knocked out Brandon Holmes in under 3 minutes. That was on August 19th. So this man is making a 39-day turnaround, which is crazy to see. It really is crazy to see, and it's impressive, might I add. I'm really impressed with him for this one. This is so tricky. This is really tricky because I can see Andre exposing the grappling here, but I can also see Cam just going out there and finishing Andre pretty handsomely. And as I've seen so far, guys that they give opportunities on Dana White's Contender Series pretty soon, they don't let them go. And I was pretty positive on Andre Petrovsky, but I forgot he lost that Edmund Shahbazyan fight, and it wasn't pretty either. He didn't look good in it whatsoever, and it's just this one's tricky. This one's really tricky, and it comes down to, can Cam keep this on the feet and put Andre away, or will Andre end up getting the takedown and running through Cam Ralston? And I think Cam is going to have the hometown crowd outside, and there's just something about this crowd when it gets behind you in Australia. You don't let them down. A majority of the time, you don't let them down. So I'm going to go with Cam Ralston to get this done. He's also an underdog. Really good underdog prediction here. And this one will be for Jonathan Mikuláev. Since I didn't pick him, I got to go with Cameron Ralston. This one should be good, and I will be excited to see how Cameron Ralston does in the UFC. Coming in next, light heavyweight division. This is the spotlight division, too. in the main event and co-main event. So keep your eyes peeled as we go throughout the card here. Navajo Sterling takes on Trator Rodolfo Bellotto, the undefeated Navajo 7-0, Rodolfo 12-2 with a draw and a no contest. So goofy. 6-4 to 6-3, 1 inch in height for Navajo, 4 inches in reach for Navajo, 79-75 orthodox stance for both of these gentlemen. -245 Navajo. Decent favorite, Rodolfo Bellotto, +190. Decent underdog. Navajo Sterling, 27 years old, from Auckland. He trains at City Kickboxing. Of his 7 wins, 4 KOs. And he actually got a knockout on last season's AYS Contender Series, which got him a contract. But, I add, he has, you know, won his 2 UFC fights, win in December and a win in May, December 2024, May of this year. And, you know, he hasn't gotten a finish. And I think this is the fight where he gets the finish. Had his debut against Tuco Tukos, and I think kind of underestimated him. Tuco Tukos was going nowhere. And after watching what Tuco Tukos did to Junior Tafa, clearly that man has the heart of a fighter, I'll tell you that. Now, as for Ivan Erslan, he threw everything at Ivan Erslan. He dropped him in round number 3. He was taking him down in round 2. He's piecing him up in round number 1. It is hard to put away Ivan Erslan, which we'll reference later in the episode. But I think Navajo has a decent chance to get the finish here, as he takes on Rodolfo Bellotto. Rodolfo, 29 years old, from Brazil, has 11 of his 12 wins by finish, 7 knockouts, 4 subs, and of his 2 defeats, they have both came by KO. His current UFC record is 1 win, 0 losses, 1 draw, and a no contest. And also, he went 4-0 in the LFA, so there's a fun fact for you there. But yeah, this man fought twice on the Contender Series, got knocked out in round 2, then got a knockout in round 2, debuted in December of 2023, destroying Ior Proterra after almost getting knocked out. He would then take on Jimmy Crute in February this year, and after getting dominated in round number 1, would fight his way back to a draw, winning round 2 and 3. Then he would take on Paul Craig in June and absolutely lose an opportunity to get a highlight reel knockout. I mean, after seeing what Modestus Bukauskas did, Rodolfo Bellotto could have put him on a platter, but unfortunately he didn't and couldn't get it done. I think Rodolfo Bellotto is going to provide a very intense in-your-face reaction for Navajo Sterling, and we're going to see if Navajo can deal with that, because he has not dealt with that with Ivan, didn't deal with it with Tukos. So if he can get around the Rodolfo Bellotto game right in your face, looking to take you down, looking to just strike with you, try and knock you out, he will get around him. So I am going to go with Navajo Sterling, but keep your eyes peeled on Rodolfo Bellotto here, because this is really going to tell us how good Bellotto is. I'm kidding you not. Every other fight for Bilal's UFC run won't tell us anything. This will truly determine if Rodolfo Bellotto is UFC material, which does suck for making picks, but I do think Navajo Sterling will get it done, and it should be a good fight either which way. Next up, we're going to try and break another heavyweight into the UFC. Justin Tafa back in the game. The bad man returns as he takes on the vanilla gorilla, Louis Sutherland. 7-5 with a no contest is the record of Justin Tafa. 10-3 is the record of Louis Sutherland. Louis Sutherland does have more reach, does have more size than Justin Tafa, but a southpaw stance for Justin and an orthodox stance for Louis Sutherland will provide an interesting opposite stance, if you will. That's all I really got in this matter. The underdog, Louis Sutherland, the favorite, the -125, Justin Tafa. Louis, sweet Louis, the vanilla gorilla. What a fun name. Remember when there was someone who used to have the nickname Vanilla Gorilla? It was Chase Sherman. Chase Sherman used to be the vanilla gorilla, but now it's Louis Sutherland. Louis, 31 years old, now 4-5 win streak, represents Scotland, fights out of England, and trains at Great Britain Top Team, the same gym as Nathaniel Wood, as Loner Kavanaugh, and as Chanel Dyer, who got a contract on this season of Dana White's Contender Series. Of his 10 wins, he has 8 KOs, and of his 3 defeats, he's never been finished. I think that's a pretty fun fact. His last win was in June, where he went the distance and got it done. So Louis, they're looking to break him in. He looks like a monster in his tapology picture, and all I know is there's two heavyweight fights on this card. It's Justin Tafa and Louis Sutherland, and it's Brandon Parrish and Alicia Ellison. That's an opportunity for 2 new heavyweights to break into the UFC, which we desperately need. And you know what? It's an easy fight for Louis, but can also be tough as he takes on Justin Tafa. Justin Tafa, 31 years old, from Brisbane, Australia. He's gone 4-5 with a no contest in the UFC, and all 7 of his wins have came by KO. Of his 5 defeats, 2 of them have came by knockout. The other have been decisions. So Justin Tafa was originally supposed to fight Hinata Dinez at UFC 317. That never came to fruition. His last fight was at UFC 312 when Tal Shantashera knocked him out in 35 seconds. Now, I don't know the size discrepancy here with Louis Sutherland, but if it's anything similar to Tyson Teixeira, it's wraps. It's game over. But I tell you what I've seen through Justin Tava's career. It's been no consistency. Debuts, knocked out by Jorgen De Castro. Then knocks out Juan Adams. Then loses a split decision to Carlos Felipe. Then loses a fight of the night to Jared Bandura. Then knocks out Harry Hunsucker. Knocks out Parker Porter. No contest against Austin Lane. Then knocks out Austin Lane. Then gets grappled to death by Carlos Williams in a co-main event. What a fumbled opportunity. He rides a two-fight winning streak. His last win was in September of 2023. I actually remember where it was for that event, oddly enough. And look, I like new guys. We need new heavyweights. And look, I don't know if Justin Tava can turn back the clock. He still has one-shot knockout power, but I'm going to ride with Louis Sutherland. Don't know a lick about him, which can help, can, you know, hurt me, but I'm going to ride with some new guys, hoping we can get new heavyweights at the UFC, because right now we are in a heavyweight economy where we are losing heavyweights left, right, and center, and not gaining any. So this might kick off the main card, whether it's a five-fight main card or a six-fight main card. I do look forward to it. Next up, lightweight division. Tom Big Train Nolan takes on the cannibal Charlie Campbell. Ooh. Charlie the Cannibal Campbell, kind of a little tongue twister there. Tom, 9-1, Charlie, 9-2. 6'3 to 6', Tom has 3 inches a night. I did not realize Tom Nolan was a 6'3 lightweight. Wow, 73 to 72 inch reach, just 1 inch for Tom. Southpaw for Nolan, orthodox for Campbell. -160 for Tom, +130 for Charlie Campbell. Odds makers have this close, and this is a pretty close matchup. It is short notice. Charlie Campbell is stepping in. Thank you very much. You know, Evan Elder was supposed to fight Tom Nolan and pulled out. So thankfully, we do get a Tom Nolan appearance. 25 years old from Queensland, Australia. Of his 9 wins, he has 5 KOs. And this man came in off of the Contender Series off of a sub-90 second knockout. He was looking phenomenal. And then ran to Nicholas Modan, was knocked out in 63 seconds, which shocked everyone. He would bounce back with a comeback win against Victor Martinez in only a 4-minute fight, then would show he has range, beating Alex Reyes, beating Vyacheslav Borsev back in February. He showed there is much more to Tom Nolan than just getting knocked out like crazy. Turned out he could even have like an Islam Makhachev, loses to some rando just really quickly, and is able to bounce back. Tom Nolan getting a massive opportunity here. Last time out, he got the win in Australia, and I'm going to hope that he can do it again as he takes on Charlie Campbell. The Cannibal. Cannibal, what a freaky name. 30 years old from New York. Out of his 9 wins, he has 6 KOs. And this man hasn't fought since April of 2024. It's been a while. He was originally supposed to fight Mauricio Ruffi at UFC 309. He unfortunately had to pull out of that fight, which really would have been a banger if I'm being honest. But yeah, 2-0 in the UFC. Actually won on UFC Noche, the original one, back in 2023. And he also lost on Dana White's Contender Series. I remember that season 6, Chris Duncan knocked him out just when it looked like Charlie Campbell was going to put him away. His last win was Trevor Peak over a year and a half ago. So we are just waiting to see if Charlie Campbell can deliver. But I got to ride with the big train here. Tom Nolan, man, he's been looking hot. He's been looking on fire. And after that war with Vyacheslav Borsev, I know he can grit it out against tough competition and still bring home the victory. Give me the big train, Tom Nolan. He's another Australian, and we love picking Australians on this card. I'm so sorry for Jonathan Mikleff. I'm really regretting not picking Jonathan Mikleff. As I look back, he's legit the only guy I haven't picked. I feel so bad, Jonathan. I really do. Did I change my pick? I can't change my pick. Oh, we didn't pick Justin Tava either. All right. Jonathan Mikleff can join Justin Tava in the not picking Australians for this card. Next up, welterweight division. Excellent opportunity here to break into the bottom of the top 15 as Jake the Celtic Kid Matthew is back to take on the Asian sensation Neil Magny. Crazy these two have not crossed paths, despite being in this company a decade together. Jake Matthews, 22-7, will have his 30th professional fight. Neil Magny, 30-13, will have his 44th professional fight. 6'3 to 5'11, 4 inches in height for Neil, and a notable 7 inches in reach for Neil Magny, 80-73. Orthodox stands for both of these gentlemen. The biggest favorite on this card is Jake Matthews at -500. Neil Magny comes in as the biggest underdog, +360. We'll start with Jake Matthews, man. Dude's been on a great run. He really has. 31 years old from Victoria, Australia. 14 of his 22 wins are by finish, 5 KOs and 9 subs. And of his 7 defeats, he's been finished 4 times, 3 by sub, 1 by knockout. But I do want to add that this dude hasn't been finished since 2021, and that was against Sean Brady, for goodness sakes. He is 15-7 in the UFC and has been them since he was the young age of 20, all the way back in 2014. And Jake Matthews, he's fought in James Vick, He's fought in Kevin Lee. He has fought in Li Jingliang. He has fought in Anthony Rocco Martin. He's fought in Diego Sanchez. Like I said, Sean Brady. He's also fought in Michael Morales, for goodness sakes. And by the way, Michael Morales, that was the last guy to beat him. If anyone doesn't know who Michael Morales is, he's the number 7th ranked welterweight on the planet and is 18-0 with like 13 finishes. Like, this dude is utterly insane. And that's been the last loss he took. 2024, picked up a win over Phil Rowe. 2025 so far, win over Francisco Prado, and a round one sub over Chidi and Jukane back in Nashville in July. So Jake Matthews coming in lots of momentum. This is the closest he's been to the rankings since 2020. I mean, come on. Come on, Jake Matthews, you cannot squander this opportunity. 3-fight winning streaks have hurt this man throughout his entire career. Came into the UFC, 3-fight losing streak, loss. Was then on a 3-fight losing streak, ran to Anthony Rocco Martin, loss. 3-fight winning streak, Sean Brady, loss. So this is his ceiling here. Neil Magny will prove just how far Jake Matthews can make it in his career. And unfortunately for Jake, Neil Magny is the Thanos of gatekeepers. I mean, I've never seen a gatekeeper like Neil Magny in my life. 38 years old, from Illinois, only 13 of his 30 wins are by finish. Crazy to think about. Of his 13 defeats, 10 he's been finished in. 4 knockouts, 6 subs. He's currently 23-12 in the UFC. This will be his 26th UFC appearance. And by the way, last time he fought in August, got around to TKO of Elizio Lozaleski Dos Santos. So he's coming in off a win, I might add. Neil has been with the company since 2013. Wowza. Wowza, wowza. At one point, he was on an electric 7-fight winning streak before running into Damian Maia. He would bounce back with a 3-fight winning streak, including beating Kelvin Gastelum and Hector Lombard. He also holds wins over Carlos Condit and Johnny Hendricks, and even had a fight against Rafael Dos Anjos on UFC 215. The loss to Santiago Ponzinibbio in 2018, getting just face-planted, knocked out in round 4, would change kind of his career for him, but he would bounce back, beating Li Jingliang, beating Robbie Lawler, before losing a main event to Michael Chiesa. Bounce back wins over Jeff Neal and Max Griffin would set him up for a fight with Shavkat Rakhmonov, who would show just why he's Shavkat Rakhmonov. As Daniel Rodriguez would clown him for his submission game, Neil Magny would then submit him in 2022. Then we get into the present age of Neil Magny. And you can even include the Shavkat Rakhmonov loss in here, as here are the guys that Neil Magny has lost to. Shavkat Rakhmonov, this is in the last 3 years. Gilbert Burns, Ian Machado-Gary, Michael Morales, Carlos Prates. His last loss, 2024, he went 1-2, losses to Michael Morales and Carlos Prates. But let me just read these to you. The number 3 ranked guy, the number 6 ranked guy, the number 7th ranked guy, the number 9 ranked guy, and the number 11th ranked guy. Those are the only men to beat Neil Magny. Who has he fended off? Phil Rowe. Mike Mallett. The Mike Mallett one, insane, is losing with 15 seconds left. TKOs him. And of course, the veteran Elizio Zaleski Dos Santos. But this is very even. This is very even for Neil Magny and Jake Matthews. I just don't know what version is going to show up for Neil Magny, because really, I've seen him show up late against Mike Mallett, and I've seen him not show up at all against Carlos Prates and Michael Morales. I've also seen him show up against Elizio Zaleski Dos Santos and not show up at all against Ian Machado-Gary. So he's hit or miss with Neil Magny, but I got to give it to Jake Matthews. Like, this would be such a great opportunity for him. He could get into the rankings with this and have the biggest winning streak of his career. Give me the Celtic kid, Jake Matthews, at minus 500. With that, ladies and gentlemen, we get into the final 3 fights of the evening. Featherweight division for this one. Jack Farr Jenkins takes on the savage Ramon Tavares. And I'm a little surprised this is as high on the card as it is. Jack is 13-4. Ramon is 10-3, but they haven't really done much in their UFC career. 1 inch in height for Ramon, 5'8 to 5'7. 2 inches in reach as well, 70 to 68. Southpaw for Tavares. Switch stance for Jenkins. That's it. That's really all you get to work with here with these two. Pretty similar size-wise. Jack Jenkins has had a fairly decent run in the UFC. He's also the minus 300 favorite, for goodness sakes. He's 31 years old from Victoria, Australia. 9 of his 13 wins are by finish, 6 KOs and 3 subs. And all of his losses, he's been finished in 3 by sub, 1 by knockout. I do want to add, they've been giving Jack Jenkins tough fights across the bat. Season 6 got a round 3 TKO with 30 seconds left to get a contract into the UFC. He would debut at the legendary UFC 284, beating Don Shaynes. He would come back a couple months later and beat Jamal Emmers. Finally, September 2023, he is tested against Chepe Mariscal, where he fails and unfortunately is injured in round 2 and can't continue. Comes back August of 2024, TKOing Herbert Burns in round number 3. This would be the final fight he has won. All right, February 2025, came back, lost to Gabriel Santos, but he has shown some great, great striking here. His leg kicks are amazing. He has landed knockdowns in his last two fights. He is good. Okay, Jack Jenkins is good. His losses are just to Chepe Marisco and Gabriel Santos, who are two amazing unranked featherweights. So, Jack Jenkins coming in from Australia. We'll see how he does against Ramon Tavares. Ramon Tavares ain't shown much. I have no idea how he's the third fight on this main card. 31 years old as well. The plus 240 underdog is from Florida, and 8 of his 10 wins are by finish. 5 kills and 3 subs. Of his 3 defeats, he's been knocked out twice. He was knocked out on Season 7 of Daniel's Contender Series, where he would then get another shot and land a 29-second knockout. He would then debut against the same guy who knocked him out on Season 7 and beat him by split decision. Then his last fight was in December 2024, where he was humbled by the legendary Davy Grant. Look, Ramon Tavares, I've never seen nothing impressive from him. Sure, he knocked out Cortavious Ramos, but who hasn't knocked out Cortavious Ramos at this point? I really like Jack Jenkins here, piecing up the legs, breaking Ramon Tavares down. I would love to see a round 2 or 3 leg TKO for Jack Jenkins. Plus, this would be such a great bounce back win for him in Australia. He's been on kind of a rough patch as of late. Let's ride with the one and only Jack Farr Jenkins. Which brings us to our co-main event and a great opportunity to break into the top 15 at light heavyweight if he can get the victory, as Jimmy Crute takes on Ivan Erzlan. I'm talking about Jimmy Crute here. No shot for Ivan Erzlan. Jack, or not Jack, Jimmy, minus 185. Irvan, plus 150. 6'2" to 6'2", this is about as even as you can get. 74-inch reach to 72-inch reach. I guess you get 2 inches in reach. For Jimmy Crute, orthodox stance for both of these gentlemen. Jimmy Crute is having a great comeback of a career. Let me just say, I am just getting the feeling I'm going to pick with my heart for these final two fights. Something's just telling me I'm going to pick with my heart for these last two. But Jimmy Crute, all right, 29 years old, Victoria, Australia, 10 of his 13 wins are by finish, 5 KOs, 5 subs, all of his 4 defeats he's been finished in. He's gone 5-4-2 in the UFC, and he's had 9 round 1 finishes. But this man comes in off of Season 2 of The Ultimate Fighter, submits Paul Craig, knocks out Sam Alvey. He has so much hype. He is then Peruvian necktie by Misha Cirkunov. Didn't even know it was hitting him with it. But bounced back in 2022. Submits Michael Jacek. Knocks out Modestus Bukauskas. He is on fire. He then runs into Anthony Smith, where he would win round one against Anthony Smith, but injure his leg. Okay? Comes back pretty quick. Is knocked out by prime Jamal Hill. All right? Then comes back. Suffers a draw to Alonzo Menifield. Then comes back July of 2023, is submitted by Alonzo Menifield. Then took 2 years off, came back earlier this year in February, and is, you know, loses the, or gets a draw against Rodolfo Blotto in a fight where he should have won it in round number one, but just couldn't pull it together. He then comes back and submits Marcin Prachino in round number one at UFC 318. It was such a feel-good moment. Man, it really was. And Jimmy Crute, I'm just so happy for him to be back in the win column. He now gets to fight in Australia again, try and bounce back. And they're giving him a good layup here in Ivan Erzlan. And Ivan Erzlan is 33 years old, from Croatia, trains at ATT Zagreb, same gym as Barbier, who we talked about earlier, who was knocked out in 1:06 by whoever the frick the crazy named man was earlier on the Davis Contender Series recap. 10 KOs and 1 sub give him 11 of 14 wins by finish, and 2 of his 5 defeats he has been knocked out. And he's currently 0-2. And the UFC decision losses to Ion Kulaba and Navajo Sterling, and all signs point towards Jimmy Crute dismantling this boy. Give me a Jimmy Crute round 1 knockout. Give it to me. I love Jimmy Crute. I hope he gets it done, and he's repping Australia. I have picked so many Australians here. And as I'm looking through the card, I am starting to notice that there may be an Australian in every fight but one. Yes, that is insane. 14 fights, there is an Australian in 13 of the 14 fights, and some of them, you know, Australian versus Australian. So we are going to ride with Jimmy Crute in this one. I mean, Ivan Erzlan has given me nothing to work with at the UFC. No striking, no grappling. Kind of just exists, if you ask me. Ivan Erzlan, I pray you get knocked out by Jimmy Crute, but I also pray you both come to Jesus, so I pray for bigger things. With it, ladies and gentlemen, the main event. Oh, I cannot believe these two have to cross paths. The number 3 ranked light heavyweight, Carlos the Black Jag Ulberg, takes on the Devastator, the number 7th ranked Dominic Reyes. 13-1. The professional record for Carlos Ulberg, 15-4. The professional record for Dominic Reyes. Both men are 6'4". Both men have a 77-inch reach. The only discrepancy you will see here is an orthodox stance for Carlos and a southpaw stance for Dominic Reyes. These two are so size-wise similar. It's crazy. Ulberg minus 250, Reyes plus 200. It's going to be close. It's going to be shifty and shafty, and I am all here for it. Let's talk about the main man, the man who was predicted to knock out Dom, Carlos Ulberg. He's been on a run. Carlos Ulberg has been on a run, 34 years old, and is somehow a prospect here. From Auckland, New Zealand, he trains at City Kickboxing. Currently has an 8-fight win streak. One of the biggest win streaks in the UFC currently. He might be the biggest in the light heavyweight division. And of those 13 wins, he has 8 finishes, 7 KOs, and 1 sub. Now, Carlos Ulberg got a nasty 2-minute knockout on Davis Katara Series Season 4. Would debut have a fight of the night against Kenny Nchukwu where he would gas out in round 2, getting knocked out. He would manage to bounce back, beating Fabio Charante in 2022, knocking out Tafana Chukani, knocking out Nicola Negamorano, knocking out Aya Patara, knocking out Dawoon Jung. Actually, Dawoon Jung was a rear naked choke. That was crazy. Getting a 12-second knockout of Volkan Ozdemir, and then 2024 to 2025 was his big coming out. Beat Volkan Ozdemir by a unanimous decision, and then earlier this year in March, co-main event took on Jan Blachowicz, and everyone scored this for Jan. Somehow, I had it 29-28 for Carlos Ulberg. And when you look at the stats, Ulberg may have dropped round one narrowly. He won round two pretty handsomely. In round three, I gave him the nod. But Carlos Ulberg really used to be all gas, no brakes. And, you know, taking on Volkan and taking on Han, you saw a much more timid version of Carlos Ulberg. Much more distance striking, not really going for the all-out finish, which is kind of what got him a bunch of hype and made me a fan coming in. Now, as for Dominic Reyes, his chin is always on watch. I think this is an opportunity for Carlos Ulberg to leap the line and become the next title challenger. So I think he's going to try and get a big finish here, if you ask me. But it won't be easy as he takes on Dominic the Devastator Reyes. The biggest comeback story last year is easily Ben, and this man doesn't plan to stop here. 35 years old from California, the plus 200 underdog, has 12 of his 15 wins by finish. 10 KOs and 2 subs. Of his 4 defeats, he's been knocked out 3 times. He's currently 9-4 in the UFC, and this man has one of the craziest careers you'll ever see. Comes in the UFC, goes 6-0, 4 finishes, 3 round 1 knockouts, beats Volkan Ozdemir and Chris Weidman, and then is robbed against John Jones. I'll never forgive the UFC for this. I'll never forgive it, and I will never forgive Joe Solise for scoring it a 49-46 blatant tomfoolery, blatant cheating in the judging. I mean, this is a fixed fight as much as you can see it. Dominic Reyes outstruck John Jones through the first 3 rounds, okay? Insane. Yes, Dominic Reyes narrowly lost round 5 and 4 because he was taken down once in both those rounds, but round 1, easy Dominic Reyes round. Round 2, an even easier Dominic Reyes round. I get round 3 is the toss-up round. 2 takedowns defended from John Jones. He didn't land a single strike that dealt any impact, and Dominic Reyes outstruck him by 7 significantly and total. Okay, I will never forgive them for that. It was a robbery. I was watching Buffalo Wild Wings. Pissed me off. That would literally change the course of Dominic Reyes' career. He would get knocked out by Jan Blachowicz, coming back, you know, later in the year. That was prime Jan Blachowicz. He would then come back in May, have to fight prime Jiří Procházka, knocked out in round 2. He would then take a full year off, come back November 2022, knocked out in a minute 20 seconds by Ryan Spann. This man would sit out for almost 2 years then before coming back in June of 2024 against Dustin Jacoby, knocking him out in 2 minutes. He would return in December 2024, knocking out Anthony Smith, basically being the one to retire him. Zhang Mingyang wasn't the one, it was Dominic Reyes. And then earlier this year, fought Nikita Krylov, knocked him out in under 2.5 minutes. He is back. And I'm telling you right now, boys, this isn't the smart pick. We do smart picks here on the podcast a lot, but something's telling me hard. Something's telling me when I'm watching this, am I going to be wanting to watch Carlos Ulberg knock out Dominic Reyes? Absolutely not. I'm here for the storybook ending. I'm here for Carlos Ulberg to be over his head, maybe think this is a walk in the park, and Dominic Reyes to catch his chin lacking. Oh my gosh, there's Ulberg. He's wobbling. Reyes has pounded him. Oh my gosh, Ulberg is down. Reyes has landed some ground pound. The ref steps in, and Dominic Reyes is back in the top 5. Give me Dominic Reyes by knockout. Oh my gosh, I love it. I love it. We can't let all the City Kickboxing boys win. We can't let all the Aussies win. No, no, no. We gotta rep America, baby. Dominic Reyes to get it done. Lock it in, people. Lock it in. Oh my gosh, I'm here for it. I'm so here for it. I'm buzzing. I'm already buzzing about this. I get myself amped about these cards when I talk about them. And let me just tell you, this is going to be a banger card. But ladies and gentlemen, it is way too late, and I am about to be going on some travels. I'm heading out to Chicago. I'm heading out to Eau Claire. If you want to say hi, DM me. Let's meet up. Let me say hello to my fans. But yeah, Dominic Reyes over Cole Sobrega. I'm going with the upset pick. I really am. You know, this card is going to be action-packed. I am not too high on my picks here, boys. I kid you not. It's hard to predict 14 fights and be confident about each and every one of them. But hey, you know, we'll see what happens. I didn't go too good at UFC Noche. I went 6-7, which, you know, funny to get 6-7. But, you know, I nailed the main event. And if I can nail this main event, then I truly may be the GOAT. I picked the underdog against Diego Lopez over Gene Silva. If I can predict a Dominic Reyes knockout over Carlos Ulbrich, I need to be on ESPN Monday morning. All right, they need to get me a desk job. But ladies and gentlemen, that's all I got on today's episode. Wow, a lot of fun stuff. Daniel's Contender Series, man, check it out. NFL, let me know who you guys ride with. I got a lot of fantasy boys. I'm kind of wishing I'd pick the Ravens over the Chiefs, but low-key, I'd rather just have the Chiefs win and have Lamar do good than pick the Ravens to win. Lamar sucks, and, you know, I'd rather be good in fantasy football than good on my pick'ems. And as for UFC, Perth guys, I mean, let me know who you guys are riding with. The fact this could have been a 17-fight card is insane. I want you all to know is that we have spent almost an hour discussing these fights, and it's been an absolute blast. So I'll catch you all next time on the Surprise Jab Podcast. Go out there, spread some joy, ladies and gentlemen. Just remember, Jesus loves you. Jesus has a plan for your life, and you should just be all about enjoying that. Just know, no matter how bad your life is, the Lord is able to look out for you. And people might be like, oh, Zach, I don't want to hear about your religion. No. This is much bigger than religion, and I hope all come to learn that. Ladies and gentlemen, I'll catch you next time on the Surprise Jab Podcast.